This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks for taking the time, Steve, to come on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure to see you, Pat.
Why don't we start off, Steve, if you can introduce yourself and your business, please.
So I'm a lawyer who was called to the bar in 1989 in Ontario. And what I do now is so-called ADR work, which stands for Alternative Dispute Resolution. And I can explain in a few minutes what that involves, but there are a number of lines of business that fall within that umbrella.
Yeah, well, why don't you go into a bit more detail as to what ADR, what that represents?
Sure. ADR is a relatively recent development, I suppose, in the legal world, and also it has branched into all kinds of other industries. But really what it involves typically is mediation, facilitation of, for example, workplace conflict, arbitrations, and another area of work that I do a lot of, workplace investigation. And the commonality between those areas and the distinction between the work that I did in the past as a lawyer is the neutrality and impartiality of my role. A mediator and an arbitrator, workplace investigator, we're neutral. Whereas a lawyer is an advocate. We don't take sides. Lawyers must take sides. That's their job.
Was that a challenge for you, Steve? You know, your training, your education was in the advocacy side of things, and now you've had to switch over to becoming more neutral.
Well, I always say this. I wish I had a nickel for every lawyer who said, how can I become a mediator? It's a really great way to make a living. You don't have skin in the game, as it were, or a dog in the fight, as the expression goes. So it's much more fulfilling. It's a lot less stressful. You're not carrying files for years at a time the way, for example, a civil litigation lawyer would. I go in and I'm a problem solver, like almost like a country doctor with my little satchel. And I go in and I try to solve the problem. It's really gratifying. And when the file's over, it's over. You don't take it home with you emotionally or physically, as it were. So it's a great way to make a living. And plus, I paid my dues. I was a civil litigator primarily in my legal career from 1989, well into the 2000s, let's say until the mid 2000s. And I feel I was a very good litigator. I was very client-centric. I always took my clients' interest to heart, and I always wanted to do as good a job as I possibly could, excuse me. And I always felt, really devoted to my clients. Having said that, when I transitioned, which was starting in 1998, but then full on in 2001 into this ADR world, it was a painless transition. It was really enjoyable.
And how did that go? And how did that happen? You know, you're working for a law firm at the time, or were you independent when you were the litigator?
Well, I'll just give you a quick snapshot. As I said, I was a litigator. I joined a firm at the time in 1998. I was 38 years old, and I joined a firm called Goldberg Schindler, which was a really well-established, highly regarded, mid-sized Ottawa firm. It actually doesn't quite exist anymore. It went the way of a lot of things through attrition, but it was a good firm. And I went in on, to use the crass expression, an eat what you kill basis, which meant I was working on a percentage of billings. It was the first time in my life, Pat, that I became an entrepreneur. And then if the file was unpleasant or it was a really ugly, let's say family law matter, because I did family law too, and I had to run a trial, I didn't stress about it because I knew there was a payday at the end of it. Whereas that's very different. It's a different mindset than when you're working for somebody and you're taking guff from a manager who either is unpleasant or is not giving you appropriate support. I was my own boss, really, starting then, even though I was working within the firm. They were covering my costs, and I was making what worked out to be roughly 50% of my collected billings. So that was when the transition started. And in 1998, I was appointed to a board. It was called the EI Board of Referees. It still exists. They changed the name a little bit, and I became an adjudicator. In other words, a kind of a private judge, if you will. But I was working for, it was a government of Canada. I was a government of Canada official, if you will. And it was a part-time job. And I blended that in with my litigation practice in 98. And it was the first time in my life that I became a neutral. And I thought, I like this. I think I have a knack for this. I may have found my niche, my calling, whatever it is. being in the middle and being a neutral. So I built that into the practice. And then fast forwarding to 2001, I obtained my mediation credentials, my mediator's credentials. In 1998 or 99, they brought in mandatory mediation in Ottawa, meaning that you, and to this day, you cannot get a trial date for a civil, non-family, non-criminal lawsuit or legal action, as we say, unless a mediator's filed a report saying that you fulfilled that condition, that you've had a mediation, settled or not. So there was a feeder system, Pat, to for lawyers turned mediators to have work. And I took a really different approach, and I can talk more about that in a minute.
Yeah, well, why don't we get right into the approach that you took?
Sure. As a litigator, I was hiring mediators, and they were nice guys and women, great people. But I felt they were that the approach was more textbook, which was rather passive, very facilitative, but not proactive. And I was just mentioning this to somebody the other day who asked me how I would describe my style, and I would say proactive. I took what I would call a litigator's approach to mediation. I talked up my business to all my friends, my fellow litigators, people I knew, saying, send me work, send me work. And then what happened, Pat, was it took off like a bushfire. It was word of mouth. And I know, well, from anecdotally, what people were telling me, lawyers who started to use me, who said, well, we'll try this guy. I don't know about this Steve guy. We'll see how it goes. I suddenly had a new client. So these lawyers started to use me because I was so proactive. I wasn't passive. And I was results oriented. So they liked my approach and it took off. And I always like to say mediation, like a lot of fields, is a merit-based business.
Is it hard for you not to take to get emotional? I don't mean emotional as in tears, but get emotionally involved in the participants when you're doing mediation and kind of lean towards one person versus the other? Like, how do you stay down that middle that you have to do?
It's a great question. I'll give you a couple of answers to it. One is when people ask me, well, how do you deal with conflict all the time? You're always trying to deal with people's interpersonal conflict, whether it's a family law conflict or I don't do really family mediations, but there might be an inter-family type of conflict. I do estate mediations, for example, mediation of estate litigation. Talk about emotional. That's probably at the
Yeah.
very apex of conflict-oriented type of problems. Well, my expression that I always say to people is, it's not my problem. It's their problem. So, Pat, if you're involved in a conflict, you might say to me, geez, this is good. It was a good experience. Hopefully, you'll say that at the end of the mediation. And you'll say to me, and I get this comment or question, how do you deal with all these kinds of conflicts? And I'll say, it's your problem. It's not my problem. So, that's part of being a neutral. You may have feelings, for example, I'm an experienced lawyer. So I'll know whether someone's trying to advance a relatively weak legal case, but I won't verbalize it because, and the second part of my answer is my job is to find a solution. So regardless of whether that's legally supportable or whether you have a strong case or a weak case, my job is to find out where's Pat willing to go or where is this client willing to go and their lawyer towards a settlement. In other words, where's their break point? Where's the compromise? Where is the water to which I can lead them? And it becomes less focused on who's right and wrong, less focused on good guys and bad guys.
So really, then your focus is on making sure it's a solution that's satisfactory to both parties. Does it happen often, Steve, where you're in that situation, you put forth a solution, potential solution that you think is fair? I assume there's lots of back and forth from there, and you typically kind of end up with something very similar to what you proposed initially.
Well, the cardinal rule is this: the mediator is not supposed to propose solutions, and
Okay.
I try to adhere to that very strongly. I will offer creative solutions for them to consider. And a mediation, typically a court-connected mediation, but most mediations have, let's say, three parts. Sometimes there are multi-levels. Sometimes they only break down into two parts. But you start off with the parties all in one room, which we call the plenary. And typically, let's talk about a court-connected mediation. Both sides are lawyered up. The lawyers will typically do the talking. Sometimes they invite their clients to speak. And that's the sort of gladiator part of it, if you will. the clashing of swords, and they'll lay out their piece. Sometimes it's more conciliatory, which I always appreciate. Then we'll have a discussion about the issues as a second phase, and typically as a third phase, you'll go into what we call caucus, where I meet privately with one side in the absence of the other, and I'll do shuttle diplomacy. And then there's a rule called caucus confidentiality that applies, which is really critical, which means that when I'm meeting with one side and their lawyer, I cannot repeat what they are telling me to the other side unless instructed otherwise. That's my rule that I follow for caucus confidentiality. And in caucus, I will propose sometimes some creative solutions that they haven't provided. But I'm not trying, just to correct you a little bit, to edit what you've said a little bit. I'm not trying to find a fair solution. I'm trying to find a solution that makes sense that both sides can live with.
So do you often run into situations where you leave a mediation and you think, well, that wasn't fair, but it worked because they both decided that that was fair to each of them? I mean, that must be hard for you to separate your own opinions from that. Or is it, no, you did what you were hired to do, which is get a solution done?
It's another great question. I do feel that sometimes, where I feel that one side left money on the table. And I'll know they left money on the table because I've been in both rooms. I knew, for example, where a defendant, for example, was willing to pay more, and a plaintiff might have accepted through their lawyer a lot less. But that's their job. I don't interfere with the lawyer's jobs. It's not my job, particularly in cases where the parties are represented by counsel, to interfere with that. So sometimes I'll leave the mediation thinking, geez, that really wasn't a very fair result. But it's the result that made them both content, or it's something they could live with, and it allows them to move on with their lives. And by the way, there's sometimes many other factors at play other than money. In a lawsuit, there's emotional factors. One person might have a spouse who's terminally ill. Or they don't have the money to fund the litigation. And those are factors that are not related to fairness about the type of result. So sometimes I really don't know what's at play, and therefore I don't interfere. But yeah, sometimes I will leave a mediation thinking, geez, that probably was not the result I would have predicted.
It sounds like it's really gratifying work. I mean, to bring two people that are in a conflict and have them, come to some kind of conclusion that they're both reasonably happy with, that must be pretty fulfilling.
It's incredibly fulfilling. And I would argue, or at least in my experience, it's a lot more fulfilling than even being successful in a court case, for example. And I've had my wins and my losses. Certainly, when you're successful, I argued a case at the Court of Appeal once of Ontario. I've had a number of trials, many trials that I ran in Superior Court, a number of small claims, and a number of other type of adjudications where I've been successful. That's really gratifying. But there's nothing more gratifying than seeing the parties settle their differences and move on. I talked about my industry a little bit in the legal world, but I also do mediations in the workplace, which doesn't involve lawyers. And those involve interpersonal conflict. And when you're able to get the parties to be forward-looking and learn how to get along with each other, we do something called a memorandum of understanding or a going forward protocol. I've used different expressions. We'll have a document that says, here's how we've resolved our conflict, and here's what we're going to do in the future to minimize potential future conflict and to resolve it if we do get into conflict. So those kinds of cases are particularly gratifying when you get a result.
So, Steve, pardon my ignorance here, but I'm trying to understand, excuse me, the entrepreneurship angle to what it is that you do. So you mentioned earlier, you eat what you kill. Is that true for everyone in the legal profession? Someone comes out of law school, gets hired by a law firm. Are they on a salary initially, or is it, hey, you go get the business and you'll get a cut of that business?
The typical arrangement is salaried employee as an associate, and then partnership. That's the stereotypical relationship a lawyer has with their law firm. That's what we're taught. That's what you strive for. But there are nowadays different arrangements. So there are percentages, bonuses, and so on. So I ended up, as I said, in '98, changing my relationship with the law firm that I was working for, and I really turned a corner. And this is something else that I think is a bit of a life lesson, that you have to be willing to change and change your viewpoint, change your vantage point, switch gears a little bit. And I did in '98. And then I started my own corporation, ADR Ottawa, in 2003, but I was still working within the Goldberg firm. And then I think it was in either 05 or 07 where I started operating my own business within the law firm, and I just started paying rent. And then I became a full entrepreneur, which I never thought I would be coming out of law school. I was going to follow that typical route that you just asked about, which was lawyer, partner, working in an ivory tower with a big office and a legal assistant. And then lo and behold, I became an entrepreneur.
Was that tough for you to make that decision, to make that final leap and kind of jump off the cliff?
No, it wasn't, because I did something a bit different than a lot of lawyers who become mediators or people who decide to get into the ADR world. And I like to talk about some of the other areas in a minute, but I blended that work into my practice, and it consisted of three main things, as it does today, my practice. Mediations, both court connected and non-court connected, in other words, workplace conflict resolution, et cetera. Arbitrations, which is very different than mediations, because as an arbitrator, you're a private judge effectively, and you're an adjudicator. You make a decision. You do not facilitate. You do not go into caucus. You're not looking for compromise. You make a decision. They're hiring you to do the type of role that a judge would do, which is to make a decision that's evidentiary based and legally based. In other words, based on jurisprudence and/or statutes. And then the third area is workplace investigations. So that is more adjudicative in nature, where I'm being paid to, or hired, if you will, to make a decision to go into a workplace. Let's say it's a harassment complaint, which I do a lot of investigating. I'll be hired to go in and interview witnesses, and then review all the documents, make a decision, provide a report. It's not facilitative. You have to use a lot of those soft skills, my mediation skills when I'm meeting with people, my people skills, but in the end, I'm making a decision. So that's adjudicative. And in those latter two areas, that I just talked about, internal workplace conflict resolution and investigation, my clients are not lawyers. They're typically HR managers, vice presidents, COOs, CEOs.
Steve, what advice would you give to someone? It doesn't have to be someone in the legal profession, but my understanding, what it is that you do, that you're doing the work, but then you also have to work on the business. You got to find time for that, right? Because there's going to be spells where you're not going to be busy as you want to be, and you got to go find the bit. So that's true for a lot of people that are out there by themselves or with a relatively small team. Over the years, I'm sure been on this roller coaster a little bit, as we all have as entrepreneurs. What piece of advice would you give to someone that's listening that may be in that same situation?
Well, for me, the single greatest source of marketing, and I know that's your expertise and you're wonderful at it, Pat, the single greatest source for me are my peers, my other lawyers in the profession. I used to think, well, I'm only going to get mediation work out of these people and arbitration work. I do a lot of arbitrations for lawyers who hire me because they have, for example, a commercial agreement, a commercial lease might have an arbitration clause where you're not allowed to go to court. You have to hire an arbitrator. So my clients are lawyers. But I'm now getting a lot of referrals from lawyers for internal workplace conflict where they're representing corporations or nonprofits. And they'll say, go to Steve Gowan. He's a good investigator. He'll do really nice work for you. So going to your peers and getting the word out informally is a great feeder source. And then, of course, there's a lot of other marketing techniques which involve social media, podcasts, obviously like this one, and LinkedIn, and so on. But for me, the greatest feeder of files and work have been colleagues and word of mouth.
I would argue, Steve, most entrepreneurs, marketing obviously is very important. It's what we do here at Extension Marketing. But a big part of our recommendations with our clients is make sure you have a really strong strategic partnership base referral program, because that's, especially for someone starting out, that's going to be your initial source of revenue, of lead generation that hopefully turns into revenue.
I'll give you an example to answer that question. I had two major arbitrations scheduled for early this year. They both settled. The buggers went and settled.
How dare they?
How dare they? How dare they resolve their own conflicts? So that freed up a lot of my time. And as a result, I have a quiet month this month. So I reached out to competitors who I know who are very busy, who I'm very friendly with, where we have a high mutual regard. And lo and behold, I've got two new files this week alone, just from reaching out to one firm who are wonderful people and they're always too busy. And I also reached out to a number of lawyers who I know who have sent me or referred me workplace investigations in the past. Also, there was an arbitration that was a little bit of a sleeping dog. And then I kicked the sleeping dog and said, "Hey, are you still interested in moving forward?" "Yes, we are." So I think you can't be complacent. And when things get quiet, as you've told me, by the way, in the past, that's the time to market yourself. And that's what I'm starting to do a little bit of right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because we run into it all the time when we're dealing with prospects or clients, and marketing has to be this consistent effort throughout the year. It's even when you're busy, if you have any kind of spare time, to put some of that time or money into those efforts, because it eventually will bear fruit. We don't just send out an ad campaign and get instant results, especially in the B2B space. B2C is a little bit different, but yeah, that's interesting. Steve, what advice would you give to someone you've made the leap, and not just someone in the legal profession, but someone that's working for a firm that's thinking of doing it, going out on their own? What advice would you give them?
I would say, first of all, develop an expertise, become great at something, set yourself apart from your competitors. I'm in the service industry. I'm not in retail or a type of commercial business. And I'm sure many of your clients are, but you can develop a unique product. In my case, it's a service. And I did try to distinguish myself from my competitors by taking a different approach to mediation by being more proactive, hopefully getting better results. And as I said, I am very results oriented. I would also say avoid an oversaturated marketplace. So for example, does the world really need another mattress company? Probably not. Do we need another shoe store? Do we need another retail coffee shop? No. And even if you're selling that online or wholesale, these are probably not great businesses to be in. I found a niche market with a great feeder system because it's required, it's necessary, as I mentioned earlier. You must mediate in Ottawa, and there's two other jurisdictions in Ontario. So I knew that I was going to have business. Even when business is slow, I'm always going to have a certain number of mediations on the go. The business of harassment investigation, misconduct investigation has exploded. So everybody and their brother or sister want to become a harassment investigator. Not everybody's good at it, and not everybody's a good mediator. So, but that's a good business to be in for me. So I think avoiding an oversaturated market is really important. And as I said, developing an expertise, setting yourself apart.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but it sounds like you didn't just go from, employee to entrepreneur at the flip of a switch. It was a gradual thing. So you got to understand what it was like to do mediations, and you got really good at it, and you kind of polished that skill, and then eventually you went into this as a full-time entrepreneur, correct?
That's exactly right. And as I was mentioning earlier, this was an evolution for me. As I said, I became a third party neutral in 98, but I was a litigator and a busy lawyer. I had a very busy practice. I even had a real estate practice, which I combined with litigation, which is not necessarily recommended. But I was doing wills and estates, you name it, I was doing it. But what I did was I waited until the business got so busy, the ADR business, before relinquishing or getting rid of those other areas of practice, to the point by around the mid 2000s, I literally stopped having an active law practice. I stayed licensed and insured for many, many years, but I was doing very little legal work. So it was really an evolution, Pat. It wasn't something I did overnight. That really worked for me, and it made sure I had enough revenue to cover off while I was building that mediation and ADR practice.
It's interesting, because we watch shows like Shark Tank and Dragon's Den, and they almost want us to say just jump, just go. And yet so many people I speak to on this podcast have the same story you have, which is, hey, I gradually worked my way into this. It was a side hustle. And I wanted to make sure I could prove the concept first, have enough revenue coming in that I could take care of my family or my personal needs. So I think that's a much more realistic approach. I think a challenge with that, and I want your opinion, Steve, is sometimes people will do that for too long, and it'll be 7, 8 years. Okay, are you serious about this or not? Is there that risk?
There is that risk, and I can tell you from personal experience, I know some exceptionally capable lawyers who probably had all the kind of personality traits and skills to become good mediators who jumped in feet first and didn't succeed because they didn't do what I did. They didn't build the practice. They didn't have something to fall back on. My dad was a businessman, and he said with his Yugoslav accent, "Become a professional, son. I have nothing to leave you." So I had my practice to fall back on. I knew that if this mediation stuff and this ADR stuff doesn't work out, I can fall back to being a lawyer. I'll always have a way to make a living. So I would always say to people, make sure you've got something to fall back on. I don't really believe in jumping in feet first and taking a huge financial gamble. Maybe that's my personality. I'm a little more conservative financially. But for me, I always had that. I always knew I had something to fall back on. So that's my recommendation for people. Make sure you've got a financial fallback.
Steve, is there anything that we didn't cover today that you wanted to cover?
No, I think we covered a lot of things, but I would say it's been a journey for me. It's been a great journey. I love what I do. I love helping people. I love working for lawyers, but I also like working for individuals and companies and having great clients. And it's been a very fulfilling experience.
And Steve, where can our listeners find out more about ADR Ottawa?
Well, just like the name suggests, adrottawa.com is my website. Everything is there, including explanations of the different practice areas I described. There's lots of good information on it. I have an online calendar so people can book me. And there's all kinds of contact information for people to reach me.
Thanks again, Steve, for doing this. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Pat. It's been a pleasure.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.